Okay, well, good.
Okay, we figured it out. Thank you. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the September 7th, 2022 Citizen Review Committee meeting. I am Candace Avalos. My pronouns are she, her, and I am the chair. We're going to do a quick round of intros and then we'll hop in. Members of the audience, please feel free. Let me change the setting here. Please introduce yourself in the chat box. You can say your name, your pronouns, what part of Portland you hail from, or otherwise, on any affiliation you wish to share. I will introduce Chris in a moment. So folks are probably like, who's that? I'll introduce him in a moment. But let's go with Yume, Heidi, Chris, Julie.
Hey everybody, Yume Delgado, he, him. I am the CRC vice chair. And I also serve with Candace on the crowd control and use of force work group.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Heidi Brown. I'm with the city attorney's office. My pronouns are she, her, and I am presenting tonight with some information on the DOJ settlement agreement.
Hi, I'm Julie Falk. I'm a CRC member from Southwest Portland.
And I'm Chris Bekarski. I'm a CRC member from Southeast Portland.
Do my eyes deceive me? Was Kira on and then not on? Or no, Kira was not here. Okay. Jessica, Ross, David, you go next.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Jessica Katz. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a CRC member from Northeast Portland.
Hey, everyone. Ross Caldwell with IPR. He, him pronouns.
David Norton, IPR staff. He, him pronoun.
Great. And then Greg and Vadim.
Greg Griffin here, CRC member, North Portland.
Hi, everybody. Vadim Mazursky, CRC member, Southwest Portland. Good to see everybody.
Okay, I think I got everybody. Sorry, just glancing at the attendees and make sure there's no CRC members. Okay, great. So as I mentioned via email too, we're trying to keep this meeting short. At the very least, if we do need to run past seven, then Yume will just need to take over for me. I do have to leave at seven, preferably 6:55. So we'll do our best to get through the agenda as quickly as we can. We're gonna start off. I'll do my quick little. No, before I do that, let me say we don't have any minutes to approve today. We will get them hopefully by next month. So we're gonna skip minute approval, and we're gonna do a quick director's report.
Thank you. Quick report. We are still implementing kind of all the changes from moving out of the auditor's office and being our own kind of independent miniature bureau. So lots of little loose ends to tie off there. Seems to be going pretty well. We're getting help from lots of people in the city on the various administrative requirements that we need. Heidi is going to give an update on the settlement agreement. And kind of the other big news for us is that we're continuing to work quite a bit on the paragraph 192 investigation, which Heidi will talk about. In her update on the settlement agreement, I suspect here in just a few minutes. And we will be opening recruitments for two of our three vacant positions, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to kind of see what we want to do with our third vacant position after that. So that's kind of the news for us. We've got a bunch of kind of all the usual stuff in the director's report there. So if anybody has any questions about any of that, please let me know or shoot me an email. Thanks.
Did I miss the link to the director's report?
I think David put it in.
I can resend.
No, I see it. Sorry. There were the intros and I missed it. Okay, got it. Okay, thank you. And then I will do my chair report. So as far as the current state of the CRC, we're just still laying low while we keep an eye on the moving parts in the police accountability world right now. Yume and I met with Mayor Wheeler last week or the week before, And we talked a little bit about the ways we felt the mayor's office could support police accountability efforts by ensuring that us volunteers have access to the resources we need to do our jobs effectively and helping to pass down some institutional knowledge to the PAC, the Police Accountability Commission. We also talked about how PSEP is doing a town hall in October on the 2020 protests. So we asked how that was going to complement the report that the Crowd Control and Use of Force work group did. He said that he would be working to ensure that our work was incorporated and that this event PSEP is putting on was due to an amendment to the settlement agreement. That's all I had written down, so I don't have any further context. We can find that further context if necessary. And then I talked a little bit with the mayor's office about the Focus Intervention Team Community Oversight Group. For those that don't know, it's a new kind of police oversight group that's working with the Focus Intervention Team, which is the new version of Gang Violence Reduction Team. And we talked a little bit about how we on the CRC could help support this group in being more transparent in their processes and not further damaging public trust as they are working to propose a new type of technology to mitigate gun violence that has a surveillance aspect to it. And so community members have risen concerns. You know, we told the mayor it's not necessarily in the CRC's lane to go into all of that work, but we just wanted to be a support as far as it, as far as being a community, you know, led group that's overseeing Portland police and just kind of offering some guidance on how they can be effective in building some trust. So those were kind of the main topics we talked about with the mayor. Was there anything you may wanted to add or that I missed?
Okay. No, I think that was it, Candace.
Great. We also talked with IPR on all of the CRC volunteers that we had on our wait list. We got like a bunch of folks confirmed. I don't remember when that was, maybe 2021, so that they could be on the wait list. If folks were leaving the CRC, we could replace them easily. So that is why Chris is here. You might also notice Ginger is not here. Long story short, Ginger was also one of the folks on our list, but then she got a job in the Philippines or something. So she obviously is not a Portland resident anymore and had to step down. But luckily, we still had some folks on our list, and Chris is one of those, and I'll have you introduce yourself in a moment. But the only other thing I'd mention is we're going to continue to work through that list and see, because there were folks that were on it that no longer were interested in serving as an alternate, and we're going to work with IPR on launching a new process to get a new group of applicants and more alternates for the coming years. So welcome, Chris. Apologies that it was probably last minute you got the email from me. I was out all last week and I didn't have a moment to connect with you. So hi, nice to meet you. If you want to just do a quick little intro of yourself, that would be great. And usually we do have everyone else kind of introduce themselves. In the interest of time, we might see if we have time for that at the end. But Chris, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Chris Pekarski. I am a resident of Southeast Portland. I live out near David Douglas High School. I have two daughters that attend in the David Douglas School District. I work for an insurance company. My wife is a nurse at a local hospital. I've been a member of the Portland community for years and years. My background is as an attorney. I have spent time working at the DA's office in Marion County and Multnomah counties. So I've also done some work with police officers and have kind of some familiarity with reading police reports, kind of understanding police interactions with people. I've done ride-alongs and that sort of thing. So I'm hopeful that my background will be useful in helping to engage with making sure that the police in Portland serve the community properly and are doing a good job for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Welcome. And we'll get you more accurately or more, what's the word? Better onboarded is what I'm trying to say in the future. So we'll connect. Okay. And with that, let's go ahead and I have my agendas all messed up here. So Yes, great. So we're going to go ahead and move into the part of the DOJ settlement update with City Attorney Heidi Brown, who is here. Heidi, go ahead and take it away. Thank you.
Thanks, Candace. Nice to see everybody. Good evening again. My name is Heidi Brown. I use she, her pronouns. And I'm one of the attorneys at the Portland City Attorney's Office, and I've been working on the settlement agreement and helping out with that as an attorney for the last 3 years. And I think the update was mostly going to focus on what's happened recently, but I wanted to just give, if it's helpful, a brief overview of the background of the settlement agreement. If it's not helpful, please just jump in and say, we already know this ad nauseum, and I'll skip down to the new remedies. So in 2014, the federal court entered an order and adopted the settlement agreement that was between the City of Portland and the U.S. Department of Justice. The DOJ is how I will refer to them from here on. And that was for the purpose of addressing concerns with excessive force used by Portland Police Bureau against persons who were experiencing or who are perceived to be experiencing a mental health crisis or suffering from a mental illness. One thing that is interesting to know is that the settlement agreement is very unique, potentially one of its kind in the country, in that the Department of Justice is not only are they the plaintiff in the case, but they also act as a monitor. So in most cases around the country, the court enters a consent decree that gives the court authority over the parties, and the Department of Justice is a plaintiff in this. And the jurisdiction that the case involves is the defendant. And then there's oftentimes an independent monitor who oversees the implementation of changes that are required under the consent decree. In this instance, the DOJ serves that both those roles of monitoring as well as being the plaintiff in the case. And it's a settlement agreement. And so the judge's authority is slightly different, a little more modified than would normally exist under a consent decree. And then we also have the COPL, the Compliance Officer and Community Liaison is what that stands for. And they are a team of professionals who also assess monitoring and provide feedback both to the DOJ and the city, as well as their reports are publicly shared, and they receive feedback from the public on their reports as well. And they give us regular feedback on the progress of the city in meeting the terms of the settlement agreement. And then the only other unique kind of aspect of this settlement agreement is that normally under a consent decree, there are, you know, we have sections under a consent decree under our settlement agreement, which are similar to a consent decree. And normally if a jurisdiction is in compliance with that section and they remain in compliance with that section for 1 year, then that section gets dismissed from the case. In the settlement agreement between the DOJ and Portland, the requirement is that the city must be in substantial compliance through for 1 year of monitoring period in all aspects of the settlement agreement before it will be dismissed. So even if the city was in substantial compliance for years on one section of the settlement agreement, it doesn't get dismissed until the city reaches substantial compliance and maintains that for a full year. So in January of 2020, the DOJ found the city in substantial compliance, and that was under all terms of the settlement agreement. And then we had COVID, the resulting recession. We had protests related to the murder of George Floyd, and the city fell out of substantial compliance. In the spring of last year, in April, the Department of Justice notified the city that we were in non-compliance. And that starts this whole process where we go, we have an informal meeting, and then if we can't resolve the concerns that the DOJ raises in their notice of non-compliance through that informal process, then we go into mediation. And that's what we did. And as a result of that mediation that we entered into last year, we came up with additional remedies to address the concerns that the DOJ had raised. So on April 29th of this year, the court adopted 8 additional remedies that are specifically to address the concerns that came out of 2020. So I'm going to go through and list out those 8 additional remedies and kind of tell you a little bit about where we are. I'm an East Coaster, and so if anybody has questions and wants to interrupt, that doesn't bother me at all. You can also, if there's questions and you want to wait till the end, that's fine too, but I just wanted to offer to folks if you want to interrupt. So the first one is not too exciting, but it does exist. And basically what it says is for the FDCRs, the force reports that an officer has to fill out before their end of shift for most uses of force. And for the after action report, which is the report that goes and reviews the force report up through the chain of command. We added a line for the author's name, date, and time for the initial submission of the reports and any edits, and then also the author's name, date, and time for each level of review in the after action process. Like I said, not too exciting, but that's the first one. The second one is a little more interesting and is something that I'm hoping that all of you will attend and share your perspectives on, which is that the city agreed to hire an outside entity to perform a critical assessment of 2020. And the outside entity is called Independent Monitor LLC. It's a team run by a gentleman, Nick Mitchell. He is from Denver, Colorado. He performs independent monitoring functions for, I believe, LA County. He's done some work with Denver and other cities. And he and his team all have a lot of expertise in policing and police reform issues, and are reviewing 2020. So what they've done so far, they've received literally thousands of pages of documents. They requested numerous documents from the city, and we provided all those to them. And they came out in June and performed an initial visit where they kind of went around the city to see some of the places where a lot of the protests occurred that ultimately resulted in uses of force by the police and violence by some of the protesters. And they also met with a number of police officers and other folks to get some background information from the police perspective. They are coming back out in October. And on October 12th, they will be attending the PSEP meeting and they will be seeking community engagement to hear from the community the impacts of the protests in 2020 and the police response to those protests. I do want to let you know that among the thousands of pages of documents that we provided to the critical assessment team, the report that the CRC did on the 2020 protests was among those documents. So I did want to assure you that everybody felt that was important to provide to them, and that was provided. So they do already have that information. Once the critical assessment team completes their assessment, they have to draft a public-facing report. And that report is something that the city is required to use to prepare a training needs assessment. So there'll be a number of recommendations in there, or we expect that there'll be a number of recommendations. And that information will inform training and what needs need to be addressed in training. Timeline is that the report has to be provided no later than 270 days, it's about 9 months, from the date when the contract was entered into with the critical assessment team, which I believe was April or May. And then at the point at which that report is issued, then the city has, it'll be a draft, excuse me, and then we have 60 days for the city to respond in case there's errors or incorrect information. And then the critical assessment team will create a final report, which we will post publicly. as well as our response. So we'll post our response as well. 6 months after we get the report from the critical assessment team, they're going to assess our response and implementation to the report. So they'll start that assessment of how well have we considered their recommendations and implemented those recommendations. They'll start that after 6 months of our receipt of that report. And then by the end of a year of receiving that report, then they will issue a second report that follows that same process I already outlined. To look at how well has the city responded to their assessment and the recommendations that they made. And then the critical assessment team, the city will have 60 days to respond to the draft, and then they'll issue their final report within 30 days. So that's the critical assessment. The next one is a separate line item in the budget for overtime related to training. That was to address a concern by DOJ that training got canceled in part due to COVID, but also toward the end due to a lack of budget related to overtime, because the overtime budget was getting eaten up by overtime hours from the protests. So we have a separate line item now in the budget for police that is specific to overtime for the sole purpose of training, so it won't get used for anything else. Probably most, if not all of you are aware that we're required to hire a civilian dean of training, which is really exciting. I think a lot of people from all sides have been really interested in having a civilian dean of training for quite a while. So the timelines on that were that within 90 days of funding, we had to post the position. The funding was approved last year in the fall bump process, which occurred in November. So the position was posted, I think it was around January. And then we had 150 days to go through the whole recruitment process and including any background check. The terms of the settlement agreement, these amendments allow for us to request a reasonable extension if there wasn't a suitable candidate in the first process. And as probably most of you know, we are restarting that process. And when we were in court last time, there was interest expressed from the amici and the PPA to be involved in the upcoming new recruitment process for the civilian dean. And so the council offices and the police bureau are looking at a way to incorporate the AMAC and the Mental Health Association and the Portland Police Association into that hiring process. The next part relates to what Ross was talking about earlier, which is he's calling it paragraph 192, which is our shorthand way of saying that within 60 days of the court entering the order, again, that was on April 29th of this year, IPR had to start an investigation into three different categories of command level staff at the police bureau. So the first investigation is into lieutenants and above who trained the rapid response team members to believe that they could use force against individuals during crowd control events without meeting the requirements of the use of force directive that PPB has. So that's the first aspect relates to training of rapid response team members. The second is related to PPB incident commanders and any designees that they may have had with the rank of lieutenant or above, and that they either directed or they authorized an officer to use force in violation of the force directive at PPB, or those same ranked folks who failed to ensure that the force reports and the after action reports were completed and completed timely. So one of the things that the city has repeatedly acknowledged along with, a lot of the issues that had came up in 2020 included the fact that the force reports and the after action process were not done within the timelines required under the settlement agreement and the police bureau directives. The last level of investigation that IPR will do is of the rank of commanders and above at PPB who failed to timely and adequately clarify those misunderstandings and misapplications of the police bureau policy governing the use, the reporting, and the review of force during the crowd control events of 2020. The next one related to PPV as an annual report. It's part of the settlement agreement requirements. In 2020, the requirement under the settlement agreement is that the PPV do the annual release an annual report, hold precinct meetings at all precincts. Currently, there are three, and then also bring that report to council to present. And in 2020, the city did not hold all three required precinct meetings. So there were two of the three meetings were held, and the third was not held. And so we agreed that PPV's annual report and the required precinct meetings will be held no later than September 20th of each year. And so some of you may have attended those precinct meetings this year. They're actually really interesting, kind of give you an update on a number of issues around stops, around force, the Bureau's assessment of kind of overview of how things went within the Bureau for the prior year. And it's an opportunity for community members to ask questions of the chief of police who presents the report, as well as the commander of the precinct is also there. And that report is also presented at council, and folks who want to come and share comments with council members about the report are also now welcome to do that. So that's already been completed at this point, but that will happen next year and every year thereafter by September 20th. The next part has to do with body cameras. So within 210 days of the court's order, so back that was April 29th again, we have to implement a body camera program. One of the first things that's in the settlement agreement is an acknowledgement that the city has to comply with any collective bargaining obligations that we may have. And if we have not completed our bargaining obligations within 120 days of that court order, which that timeline is coming up, then we have to provide periodic updates to the DOJ and to the court. And those would be procedural updates. Just to be clear, we're in mediation, so we're not allowed to disclose what we're discussing, but we can disclose kind of you know, that we're still in bargaining and still working on it, or that we've declared impasse and we are no longer able to get to yes, or that we've gotten to yes on everything. So those would be the kind of procedural updates that we would provide. And then once a policy is finally adopted, whether it be through the collective bargaining process, if we come to agreement on everything, or if we don't come to agreement on everything and have to go to an arbitration hearing, which is the process laid out under state law for resolving disputes for police. And it's the same for police, fire, and 911 operators. They're not allowed to strike, so they have this different process to resolve disputes on collective bargaining. And if the result of all of this does not address the DOJ's concerns that led to their requirement that we adopt a body-worn camera program, then they have retained the right to bring the city back into court and to proceed on a hearing about whether or not we were in non-compliance back in 2020. And if so, then the court would have pretty broad equitable authority to order what remedy Judge Simon felt was appropriate. And lastly is the continuation of IPR to support that continuation through the adoption of the new oversight board. So as I'm sure all of you know, the voters approved a community police oversight board. And there is a commission, the Police Accountability Commission, that's currently working on what the structure and framework of that oversight board will be. And so they have, under the new terms of the settlement agreement, they have 18 months to come up with a recommendation to council as to what that structure and framework should look like. I will note that council had already been well on its way with that commission when we entered into this order, and So the council resolution appointing the Police Accountability Commission provided them with 18 months to present a structure and framework to council. And that 18 months under that resolution started in December of 2021. So a little bit earlier than what the court order is. But under the court order, we would have 18 months from the date that the judge entered the order, again on April 29th. And then once council receives that recommendation, then within 60 days, the city has to present to the Department of Justice amendments, or we're going to propose, excuse me, amendments to city code to allow for adoption of this new framework. And then we also have to submit to the DOJ a proposal for amendments to the settlement agreement that would comply, that would change the provisions specific to IPR and move them over to the oversight board. And then at that point, the process before court will be the court that will have a fairness hearing and determine whether or not those changes to the settlement agreement are fair, adequate, and reasonable. And again, that's something that anybody, any member of the public can attend. And Judge Simon always allows for feedback from members of the public on that. And then once a new city code is adopted, then we have the city has 12 months to staff and operationalize the new oversight board, and then we'll transition the work from IPR over to the new oversight board. I think that is pretty much everything. Of course, there's a lot more details than, and I'm happy to answer any specific questions anyone has or explain anything further. But thank you.
Thank you, Heidi, for that thorough overview, which is not only for us as the CRC, but also for the public and folks that interact with our work. So we're grateful that you could give us this version of an update. It's hard to follow all of the other city things. I know I personally can't keep up, and it's my job to keep up. So I can't imagine how the average person can. So thank you. Are there any questions? Okay. Well, if there are no questions, then thank you so much, Heidi. We know you're a busy woman, so you are free to jet off to whatever you've got next. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, everyone. Have a great night.
You too. Bye.
For all your work.
All right. So great. Next up, we have IPR report. Molly is coming. She's here. Okay. Or they're here. I do not know your pronouns. Hi, Molly. We're going to go ahead and do a report overview. So go ahead and take it away.
Okay, great. So I don't think Molly has been to a CRC meeting, at least in quite a while, but she is our analyst at IPR. She works on all of our reports, puts out, you know, does all of our kind of DOJ and COPL timeline reporting and a million other things that I probably wouldn't do a great job of summarizing right now. But anyway, Molly, thank you for being here. I'm just going to kind of go over the highlights of our report here, and CRC folks, if you have any questions about anything, please jump in. I hope you've had a chance to review this. It's not going to be, if you haven't had a chance to kind of look over it at least cursor, a little bit, it's probably not going to be terribly enlightening. But if you have any questions, please let me know, and we can always follow up later if you have more in-depth questions that you want to go over. We can set something up to have a longer conversation. So kind of first off, the highlights from 2021, this is kind of toward the top of the report. I'm not going to share my screen because sharing screens and scrolling drives me crazy. I don't like when people do that to me, so I won't do it to you all. But kind of the big takeaway is that we really saw misconduct complaints fall pretty significantly in 2021. We're still looking into kind of any demographic information we can gather from that. When people make complaints to us, they have the option of adding demographic information. We ask for it, but we don't make it mandatory because we don't have a chilling effect on people filing a complaint. So we don't always have great, race, ethnicity, gender, age, any of that information. We have some, but not everything, not even actually close to everything. But we did see, we saw a pretty significant drop off in complaints last year, both in what we call C cases. C cases are cases that come from the community, and then also in B cases, and B cases are cases that come from inside the police bureau. So we were seeing kind of an increase in number of complaints from within the police bureau about other members of the police bureau. And that was, that kind of been steadily increasing. I think we went up to, Molly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we got up to like 80 or something like that in 2019 or 2020, something like that. It had gone up from like 60 something to 80 something. So we're kind of curious if that was gonna become a trend or not, but it dropped down pretty significantly along with all of our other complaints last year. So we're most of the way through 2022. We're kind of tracking the numbers, and we'll be curious to see, see what we see out of this year when the year's all wrapped up. Molly, anything you want to add about any of that before I jump on?
No, you're pretty correct. I think our max B cases in the past is right around 77.
Okay, yeah, that's something. So kind of the next section, if there's no, again, please jump in with any questions. The next section, we talk about regaining compliance with settlement agreement, and trying to kind of dig out of the backlog of cases that that came in during the 2020 protests. That kind of ate up a lot of last year for us. That was kind of the biggest thing we focused on, the biggest thing that we spent our time on.
Ross, can I interrupt you real quick to say, when you say like the next section, like, are you wanting us to follow along on a page with you that you're looking at, or are you just saying kind of in general?
I'm just trying to get, I'm just kind of going through the report and kind of from top to bottom. So if anybody has any notes of anything they want to ask about, jump in where appropriate. If you want to jump to another section, go ahead.
If you're looking at a like page, it'd be helpful to just say it. That way we can follow wherever your eyes are.
Well, the way that it shows up on here, there aren't actually pages. You just kind of scroll from top to bottom. I think you can, let's see, you can download a PDF. That would probably have
been... Yeah, I'm looking at the PDF. Is that not what you're looking at? Are you looking at a version?
I'm just looking at it on our website, but I can...
Okay. Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to see where you were like directing us to so I could follow along.
Yep. Thanks. Got the PDF open now. So let's see, I would now be down to kind of around the top of the bottom of page two, top of page three, start talking about some of the ways that we track our investigation timeliness. And so we have a certain amount of days to complete an investigation in its entirety. But then those timelines are then also divided up into a lot of kind of subcategories. So we have a certain amount of time to do an initial intake investigation. We have 14 days for that. And then we have a certain amount of time, we have 70 days for other investigations that kind of go beyond that. And so we track all of those things. We've got a couple of charts in there that Molly put together for how we kind of cut that. A lot of this report is kind of cutting the data on our cases in a bunch of different ways. So we cut it by, what got done in time, what didn't get done in time to meet our DOJ timelines. And then we also have kind of towards the end of the report, we have some numbers on, what were the outcomes of these different complaints? What was administratively closed? What was sent for a supervisory investigation? What was sent for a precinct referral? Kind of things like that. Does anybody have any questions about any of the timeliness stuff before I jump on? Okay. So now I'm at the top of page four. We got a policy review that came out last year. This was on use of different communication devices for people for whom English is not their first language. I think we talked about that report in one of the meetings. I think a lot of you have probably seen that before, although maybe it's been a while. And Chris, I know you're new, so you probably hasn't seen that before, but we've got a link here if you want to revisit that report, if you've got questions about it. With kind of any of our policy reviews, we always make some recommendations to the police bureau, and then we follow up on those recommendations and track them to see what gets implemented down the road. So we will, you know, keep an eye on this and follow up down the road once the bureau's, you know, had some time to implement some of this stuff. We'll check in and see how things are going. We kind of follow, not dissimilar from kind of an auditing model in some of this stuff, not necessarily how we write the reports, but how we try to track the recommendations and then follow up on those later on to make sure they're not just kind of getting tossed somewhere. The next section, and we are now getting to page 5. And this is just kind of an overview of the different roles in the accountability system. Part of this is kind of a nod to the fact that we have, you know, that we're looking at a new accountability system and that a new accountability system is in the process of being created. There's often a lot of confusion about kind of what IPR does, what internal affairs does, what the chief does, I think sometimes about what the CRC does. And so we put this together just to kind of say, you know, look, we do a lot of intake stuff. We do a lot of investigation stuff. We send things over to internal affairs and we monitor their investigations. But then a lot of the decision-making processes kind of live at the police bureau, or ultimately, depending on, you know, which route they take, they could go to CRC, they might go back to city council for kind of a final decision. But we put this section together just to kind of give an overview of how the actual process works. We're working on another report that's been a little bit delayed, but it's kind of just another kind of look at how the discipline process works from the inside. It's similar to this, but quite a bit more detailed. And we tried to, you know, Molly's been looking into kind of whatever data we could track so that we could try to figure out, you know, when a recommendation is made, what happens with that recommendation? Does it tend to be downgraded to a lower level of discipline? Does it tend to be upgraded? You know, what do we see? Some of the stuff in our system is pretty complicated because there's a lot of people that make recommendations, and any of you that have served on the police review board know that recommendations don't have to be unanimous. So, you know, 5 different people can recommend 5 different things. So it's a little bit tough to track. That's a report that we're hoping to get finished up before too long. And it's something that we hope will be helpful to the Police Accountability Commission. You know, something that they can kind of take and put into the mix as they're looking at ways to build a new accountability system. So that'll be forthcoming, and it's kind of a longer, more detailed version of this. Molly, anything you want to add to any of that? So the next section that kind of takes us to the top of page 7. We talk in this section, as we have in past reports, just about the number of complaints that have come in. You can see there kind of the orange bar that we've had a pretty drastic decline in community complaints. And we've also had a decline in blue for the complaints that came in from the police bureau. And then we talk about the demographic information that we are able to get. And again, not everyone is willing to give that information to us. Not everybody feels comfortable giving that information to, you know, one wing of the government. And so there are some caveats to that data, but we also track it by location. We look at things based on officers having more than one complaint. And then we look at kind of trends in allegation types. And so when you get down to page, I think around the top of page 10, we kind of break it down into different kinds of allegations and how many we're seeing. So Molly really cuts this in a lot of different ways, so we can kind of try to see any trends that we can based on the information that we're getting from the public in the form of complaints.
Can I ask a question? In my time on the CRC, I'm really so struck with how many of the allegations deal with misconduct or courtesy, or don't, but that's part of the story that they tell, even if the allegations aren't specifically brought around those issues in that particular case. And just thinking about that here, how useful is it to distinguish between courtesy and misconduct? They seem really similar the way they're described here. I'm just can you say more about that distinction?
Yeah, I mean, if an officer is discourteous, that is a form of misconduct. So it's, these are all kind of different categories of misconduct. Courtesy is one, conduct's another. Those often kind of come in together. One of the, you know, this is anecdotal, I don't have any numbers on this yet, although I think we'll have some in the future. But one thing that we're really seeing a lot of now is, I had my car stolen, I called the police, they didn't show up for a long time. And I feel like they didn't fully investigate. I feel like they didn't get the camera video from the bank across the street or something like that. And they were rude to me. And so something like that could come in as, if they were, if the allegation is that the person, the officer was rude to the person, that would be a courtesy complaint. And if it was that they didn't kind of follow through and take a report, you know, take their information and write a report, that could come in as a conduct complaint.
Wouldn't that be procedure?
It can be procedure. It can also be conduct. There's kind of a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when our investigators are speaking to complainants, you know, they don't call in and say, I want to complain about courtesy or procedure. They say, I have this problem. My car.
Right. Right. So wait, so because there's a lot of overlap in all of them, like, even more than I realized maybe, but they're only counted once, right? Like,
a lot of it, you know, we count the allegations. And so if a case, right. if somebody says to our investigators, when they make the complaint or when they fill out the form online or whatever they do, that they were rude to me and I feel like they didn't, you know, they didn't take appropriate actions and they didn't write up a report despite the fact that I did all these things, that could come in as two or maybe three different allegations.
Yeah. I can just imagine that, like, if conduct were parsed a little bit more, that the courtesy allegations would be a lot higher. But some of them are probably lumped under conduct, or are lumped under conduct. Yeah.
A lot of our system is kind of based on, you know, what's in the directives, you know, because when somebody calls and makes a complaint, we have to find a way to write that to say, you know, that we're comparing behavior to the PPD directives. And so we have to find a way to say, you know, which, if somebody calls and gives us a story, we have to kind of say, all right, what are they alleging that the officer violated? Because there's a lot of these cases that do get closed because people call and they say, I was pulled over and I got a speeding ticket. Not the police that I was pulled over and got a speeding ticket. Don't police have something better to do than this? And in that instance, you know, that's not really a complaint of misconduct. They're complaining. They might make a complaint of misconduct. They said, you know, I think this officer lied. I was going 40 miles an hour. They said I was going 60 miles an hour. That could be a complaint of misconduct. But we do get a lot of complaints where people don't actually allege anything that's a violation of a directive. And that's a lot of what shows up in our administrative closures. So we're always trying to kind of like get our arms around everything that the complainant says and then kind of distill it down into something we can either prove or disprove, at least to the best of our ability, because, you know, these are ultimately administrative investigations and we are trying to compare that behavior, you know, to what the directives say. And then there are times where we find that the directives are lacking, and that's usually where we try to, you know, we try to kind of follow that up with a policy review or something like that. Molly also works on those a lot. That's kind of how we got the one about, the one we did last year about people that don't speak English as a first language, that came out of that. We had some complaints from people that said, well, I called this officer, but he couldn't communicate with me effectively. So that's kind of a, you know, that can be kind of a gray area in certain circumstances, but officers also do have access to things like the language line. And, you know, there are some officers who are bilingual. So in that instance, if we're kind of seeing a trend in complaints, we might try to scoop that up into a policy review. It doesn't change what we do with the individual complaints. It's just a trend that we want to further look into kind of from a higher perspective.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, but you're right. A lot of these, you know, there's a lot of overlap between procedure, conduct, and courtesy, and it's, you know, writing allegations is a tricky thing. It's kind of part art, part science. And sometimes you find out more things later and you have to go back and add more allegations. So it's not an easy task, certainly. Okay, so that's around page 10. Around page 11, we get into some statistics on what happened with these complaints, how many were administratively closed, what was referred for supervisory investigations, went to internal affairs, stayed with us for a further investigation, or went as a precinct referral. Then we show some information on our closure rates over time, So those are how many cases were administratively closed year by year. And then we have some more information on that about kind of different decisions made by the chief's office. And please keep in mind, this is kind of further up in the report where we talk about whose role is what, but you know, we have some information here on what was ultimately the decision on a case. So what decision did the chief's office ultimately make on a case? And then what was sustained versus what wasn't sustained? We have some stats on that. A lot of these are things that we track kind of year over year that we track on our website. So this can kind of match up with that if people are interested. We have some data on disciplining, how many officers disciplined when you get down to page 14. And then bottom of 14 going into page 15, we talk about the two CRC appeals that we had last year. And that kind of, that wraps it up. So any questions about any of that? I know it's a lot to buzz through quickly, but that's why it's a long report.
One thing that I noticed in here, Ross, that I don't think we touched on. So there's a section in here that talks about officers with multiple complaints. And I think there are 10 officers who were identified as having three or more complaints in 2021. Do we know, or are we tracking like the degree to which those were sustained, right? Or the severity of those complaints? Because it's one thing if those are the 10 people who are working in motor pool, you know, traffic enforcement or something, and they're all getting courtesy complaints because they're writing tickets. It's another thing if those are serious, you know, issues, or if these people are showing up on a Brady list.
Yeah, very good point. That is tracked. I think that a lot of those officers that had multiple complaints were officers who were protests. I didn't check that before this, but I think that most of those were people who were protests, and most of those, and I can't obviously get into specific case information or officer information publicly, but I think a lot of those were people that were working protests and were having the most interactions with the public. Molly, does that kind of, I see you nodded.
Yeah, I believe that is correct. I was gonna say they were the protests involved as well.
And I think that in previous years, if I remember right, that there were fewer officers that have kind of that multiple complaint flag go up.
This year was a pretty big decrease from 2020, which again speaks to those officers with multiple complaints probably being mostly protest related. I think we went from, what was it?
And when we're tracking those, I'm assuming we're tracking based on intake date, not when they went to PRB or cleared through the system then?
Yeah, we do all of our tracking and reporting based off of the date that it was reported to IPR. So sometime, usually that's going to be the day that we also begin like the intake investigation, but sometimes there might be a little delay between when it's reported and when we begin to move on it. So we feel that's the most accurate accountability for community members to start from the day they tell us about it.
I appreciate that, Molly. So Ross, I think if I had one wish list item, I think it would be in the public's best interest if we are finding officers who are having multiple complaints sustained against them, that maybe be a metric point that we're tracking. I'm sure there are going to be multiple officers who got multiple complaints from protests. And like I said, I'm sure there are other cases where if you're interacting with the public on a really regular basis, doing something like writing tickets, maybe you're going to be in the public ire a little bit more. But if we have, you know, use of force complaints that where we're seeing the same officer, you know, get sustained multiple times, or a not sustained complaint that was, you know, a 4 or 5 decision in a PRB or something, I think those are things that, you know, potentially it would be good for us to have a better handle on.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that, I know the chief's office pays attention to this. During the protests, we had some discussions about who we were seeing complaints come in on and who we were hearing. You know, we were hearing certain names a lot. And that was because we knew these investigations were going to take a long, long time to get through, especially because we had so many kind of starting around the same time. And so you know, administrative investigations do not make for a great early warning system in a lot of ways because they take a long time. They're slow. Sometimes we have to wait for certain records to come through. Sometimes we have to wait for people that are out on some kind of protected leave. And we have cases that are still working their way through on the, you know, from the protests based on things like that. Sometimes there's a criminal investigation that needs to wrap up first. You know, we are still, as much as I like to think that we spent it last year trying to dig out of the 2020 protest force cases, you know, we still have these coming in mainly in the form of tort claim notices where people are suing the city. And we review those for any complaint of misconduct, and we try to reach out to the complainant and see if they'd be willing to speak to us. And then we investigate with, you know, whatever information we get our hands on, et cetera. Yeah, it's a great point. You know, we could look in that discipline report that I referred to earlier that we're still working on. That might be something we could put more information or as much information as we're allowed to put out publicly in that report. So thank you. Molly, anything you wanted to add, or does anybody else have any questions? Making some notes here for what you missed.
Nothing for me.
Candace, I think that's it for us then on this part. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Great. Well, let's go ahead and move on in the interest of time. So next thing on the agenda. So I added this kind of last minute. Bear with me as it's a little bit on the newer side for me as well. And so I don't have too much context. Maybe Mr. Handelman can speak to the PAC's work around this. So essentially, I was informed about a new commission that was created out of SB 621 to create the statewide police discipline guide that supersedes any local ones. It was something I like had a general awareness about, but definitely there are some moving things currently that I would like to entertain if CRC wants to have any input on. I think it's relevant to our work. So I'm gonna drop a couple of links in the chat here for folks to just kind of glance through. So that's the commission. This link here is the first concepts that were originally drafted up, and then the first draft as well. I'm dropping lots of links here in the chat for y'all. And then lastly, here's an OPB article that kind of speaks a little bit more to what's going on. So the reason I put it on this agenda and for us to discuss is there is a September 16th deadline for the public or anybody, any entity to comment on these recommendations, and the rules would take effect on October 1st, unless your city is in current collective bargaining, which I'm assuming that means us, like we're still technically in collective bargaining. Am I understanding that correctly, Ross? Like we reached like some kind of semi-agreement, but we're still technically under bargaining or no?
Around the statewide?
PPB bargaining.
Oh, the PPB contract is set. I think the thing we're bargaining on now is around body camera policy.
So it's like, because of that, we're technically still in it. So as far as this requirement, it wouldn't apply to Portland specifically by October 1st?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. I'd have to double check.
Okay, so that's one thing that I want to look into. But also this new, what this means is that there would be a statewide discipline guide that would supersede Portland's discipline guide. So that's the part that's, you know, relevant to our work and something that we should look into. The Police Accountability Commission is planning to write a statement. Only problem is their meeting is tomorrow. So unfortunately, I don't have a draft of their statement or anything yet to know like what exactly they're going to say or comment on all of this. But they reached out as an interest for CRC to possibly co-sign on that statement. The timing's not ideal because we can't make a decision to co-sign on anything without a vote, and that requires us to meet, and this is our meeting time. So I'm not exactly sure how that's all going to pan out, but I still wanted to put it on everyone's radar and just kind of get your general vibe of do we want to be involved in this process? If so, how so? If there's interest in us finding a way to co-sign onto the PAC statement, then that would be good for me to hear from you all and just understand so that we can figure out what to do moving forward. So that's kind of the background. Let's start there. Questions overall, I know I threw a lot at you, but general questions?
Would it be possible for Mr. Handelman to give us a sense of what the statement might say?
Yeah, I know that Mr. Handelman often juggles wearing many hats, and he attends our meetings with his Portland Cop Watch hat. But if you do want to speak to this, Mr. Handelman, then you can raise your hand. And if he does, do we want CRC, do we want to allow him to speak to us? Just a quick yes or no. Okay.
I could ask if Heidi's still available to pop back on. She would have the kind of the real answer on how this would apply to PPV if you want that.
Okay. That might be worth it if she just has 5 minutes to pop back.
Yeah, let me text her.
Okay. So I'm not seeing Mr. Handelman's hand going up. Let's see.
I think he said he'd be happy to speak in his capacity for Portland Cop Watch, but not necessarily.
Oh, I see. We actually just a state commission through Portland Cop Watch. Happy to talk about it. Okay, got it. So is that something we want to do then? Oh, and here comes Heidi. That would be great. So let me pause and let's hear from Heidi real quick. Thanks so much for rejoining us. We just had some questions that were like, oh, that'd be great if she were still here. We're talking a little bit about the whole discipline guide thing that's going on. And one of the stipulations is that a change will take effect October 1 unless the city is in bargaining. So does that apply to us?
It does not. So the city already bargained its own corrective action guide with the PPA. And so that under the state law, that corrective action guide will apply during the term of the collective bargaining agreement. And then once the collective bargaining agreement concludes at that point, then the statewide standards would apply to the city.
So what I'm hearing you say then, is this date of October 1st when the new standards apply?
Those will apply to any jurisdiction that hasn't collectively bargained their own discipline guide or standards to address disciplinary matters. But since the city did adopt one, our new guide applies to the city. So the application of the new guide is for complaints that were opened on or after February 17th of this year, which is the date when council ratified the PPA contract.
So are you saying then in general, because I'm also understanding from the very limited context I have that this new state guide supersedes the city. Is that what you're saying is not true? It does not supersede the cities?
Correct. Yes, because it allows at the very end of the law, it allowed that it applies to collective bargaining agreements entered on or after the effective date of the statewide standards. And so we entered into our own corrective action guide prior to that date. So ours applied during the term of our collective bargaining agreement. Once our collective bargaining agreement expires, then those statewide standards will apply.
And then is that something where, is it just that the statewide standards apply as we bargain the next contract, or just when that current contract ends, the state ones are going to apply forever? I don't know if that made sense. Did that come out right?
No, it's an interesting, if you're asking me, so normally at the end of a contract, we go into something called status quo, which means that while we're bargaining, if we go past the end of the contract, most of the terms of the contract stay in place and in effect. I would think that that would be the case in this instance, but once that is done, then those statewide standards will apply. And this contract extends until June 30th of 2024.
So in other words, in the new contract that's going to be bargained at whatever point for the June 2024, the city is not going to include a new bargaining guide, or I'm sorry, collective action guide, because the state one is just going to be what's we take on as of 2020. Is that what I'm hearing?
As of 2024, yeah. Well, after June 30th. Mm-hmm.
So just typing some notes here.
Yeah.
While she's typing, I'd be interested in knowing when the contract expires in June 2024, you said, sorry. And then, you know, the normal process would be to go into a status quo. That's a status quo where there's not a contract in place. So if there's not an active and you may not have the answer today, I understand, but if there's not an active contract in place, then wouldn't the state guidelines step in because there's no longer a signed collective bargaining agreement? There's just kind of a, we agree that we'll do status quo until the next time around.
So, you know, it's an interesting question that I'm not sure I have the legal answer to that right now. I'd have to, I didn't think about it till Candace just was saying, well, when does it stop applying? And I was like, that's an interesting question about whether or not. So normally, other than like COLAs, cost of living adjustments, the most terms and conditions of a collective bargaining agreement extend and continue to apply if you haven't entered into a new collective bargaining agreement by the end of your current one. And so that's what's called the status quo period, meaning the status quo that exists at that time continues until you finish bargaining, or you are either implement, or in our instance, in that instance, you go to an arbitration hearing if we weren't able to agree. But once you're done with that whole collective bargaining process, then you just go into, you are living under the status quo. I don't know. If we're not done bargaining on June 30th of 2024, I will have to analyze that question of, does statewide standards then apply, or are we in status quo and our corrective action guide continues until we finish status quo? Very interesting question. I don't have the answer, sorry.
That's all right, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, that's helpful to know. Is the city, what is the city's level of, I don't know, involvement or in the conversation as it relates to the statewide stuff?
We weren't invited to be part of the commission that put together the statewide standards. And just so you know, they started meeting, I believe, because somebody I know is on there on the commission, and they started, I believe it was after we had ratified our new contract. So we weren't at all aware of what they were going to do until we were all done with ours.
When did you say, though, that was?
It's February 17th of this year is when our council ratified the contract, and that's when it went into effect, was that day.
Okay. So they were basically working from March to now to make these new standards?
Something like that. I can't remember exactly when they started meeting, but it was. From my perspective, really late. It took us a long time to come up with our corrective action guide, and it was a lot of work. And so it seemed late to be starting that type of a meeting, but that's all right. Yeah. They seemed to come up with something. So I guess it worked out.
I see. That is also my impression. Okay, other questions folks have? I guess maybe my last question is, I don't know if you're, I always get stuck in this, like, can you provide legal advice or can you give us advice in general? We're discussing whether like we want to weigh in as far as either signing onto a statement or just weighing in on the new proposed discipline guide from our perspective. Does that make sense for us to do? Is there anything like we should think about as it relates to that?
Legally? On the statewide guide?
Yeah.
I think it's always valuable to provide input. And I think especially this group, because you have so much expertise on here and you've been working on, you deal with police misconduct and allegations of policy violations regularly. So I think there's a lot of value coming from this committee in particular to provide some input on them. And even though, Portland won't be under those at this time. You know, there will be a point in the future when we are. And so having your feedback, this is just my personal opinion. I think it's very valuable for whatever that's worth, but I do think you have a lot of expertise to offer.
Okay.
Candace, if I'm understanding your question, I think the issue here was that the deadline for feedback is next Friday, and there's not really a way for us to legally convene before that time unless we were to come up with a statement on our own tonight.
That wasn't exactly my question, but that is another issue, but I feel like we could deal with that, you know, OPML issue, really. More so, I was just trying to see if there are any legal things I needed to worry about or make sure to avoid as it relates to us, like weighing in or whatever's going on with the bargaining. I don't know. I can't keep up with all that sometimes. So, but it sounds like what you told me is what I expected. So,
yeah, it will not negatively impact bargaining because we're already done with that aspect for Portland. And so I think just being clear that you're speaking on behalf of the, you know, Citizen Review Committee and is great.
Okay. Any last things for Heidi before we let her go again? Thanks again for hopping back in. We appreciate it.
Happy to do it. All right. Take care.
Bye. Night. Okay. Let's see. Is Mr. Hanneman still raising their hand? Let's go ahead and let Mr. Hanneman speak real quick, and then we'll discuss what to do. Okay, you should be able to speak now. I know you said something about your phone. So is it that you can't? Okay. Wait and see if there's something in the chat.
Can you enable the phone in caller to speak? I think that's usually the issue.
Is there a phone in caller?
Yeah. You need to unmute the caller is what Dan's saying.
Oh, I see. Well, I see it says total one phone call in listener, but I don't have a button to unmute that person. It just doesn't show up on our list like it normally does.
Yeah, I don't see. I actually do not see the caller.
I don't either. It just says total one call listener, but normally it's on my list and I can click the button.
Yep.
And
let them. Yeah.
I don't know what to do here. Let me see. Need to unmute call. Yeah, it's not showing up that way. How about let me just open the chat here, and if you want to add anything in the chat, Mr. Hanneman, let's just do it that way. While Mr. Hanneman does that, thoughts from folks on everything we just heard, any ideas for how we want to engage on this issue?
I think what occurs to me, I don't know how many of you had the opportunity to read through that proposed draft guidance, but as someone who's sat on a handful of PRVs, I think most of those things are pretty straightforward. They're pretty egregious violations, and they're, in all honesty, not always the things that we end up dealing with when we're dealing with misconduct allegations. I think the notable thing is the elimination of, at least for Portland, it would be the elimination of our extremely complicated discipline matrix. But, you know, if you were to ask me to weigh in with my official comment on it, I'd say, I'm surprised we haven't done this sooner. And it doesn't necessarily address the meat and potatoes of what I think we deal with in the city a lot, which is non-lethal use of force allegations, right? So if we want to devote resources to making an official comment on it, I'm more than happy to do that. But I also don't think the world will stop spinning if we don't, especially given the time frame.
Yeah, and I feel like my concern is more around the state matrix being a ceiling, not a floor. So I think if there's like a floor, like these are the basics, right? And then a city could add some other layers, or, you know, if there are some things that this on a city level we disagree is enough, like kind of like what number two, Mr. Hanneman just posted as number two in the chat, then it seems like the city's hands are tied. That's how I'm understanding the whole situation. And so that's where my concerns just personally come from. So yeah, but as far as like where CRC is on all of this, the timing is hard. I agree, it's not the end of the world if we can't, you know, participate in like submitting a statement, but maybe it's something that we'll have continued conversation, especially because Portland in particular, it's not gonna apply to Portland for a couple of years. So maybe it's something we keep on our radar that if there are ways that we feel we wanna advocate for changing at the state level, we can do that advocacy. That's kind of how I'm seeing the landscape.
I'm seeing one of Mr. Handelman's comments is that there's going to be a review of the rules in 2 years prior to the termination of the PPA contract. So I guess the good thing is that the state, we can see how the state rules work and try to extrapolate if there are rules that will be beneficial to Portland citizens, or if the state has determined that rules need to be revised in a way that anticipates what's going to happen in 2024, 2025, that's helpful as well.
Yeah, agreed. Okay.
I think point five on Mr. Handelman's notes is notable as well, because it sounds like they mean, we'll see if they actually come up with a statement.
Yeah, it seemed like it was all a little rushed from what I understood. Yeah.
I would be happy to attend that meeting tomorrow as an observer, but it says it's going to go from 6:30 to 9, and it may run long, and I don't know that I want to spend 4 hours waiting to see what agenda item that is. So
yeah, maybe Mr. Handelman could do us a solid and be like, yo, pop on now. I cannot tomorrow. I have got other things I got to do. So maybe you can connect. No, you don't have the authority to do that in a professional or a official capacity, but maybe in a, hey, you may, we're starting, can you send him an email kind of way?
I can also reach out to Samir. I'm happy to do that.
Cool.
I'll be there most of it.
Who was awesome. That, Greg?
It's me. I will be there tomorrow.
Okay, great. Well, then let's plan to check in on PAC, see what's going on, and then, yeah, we sounds like we'll have some time to noodle on this, but now everybody is aware. Oh crap, and it is 6:54. Okay, so the other thing that I have on our agenda, I'm gonna move on, is I had put on some time for us to talk about barriers to police accountability. Remember when the PAC came last month, they were doing some research around that. And we're asking for CRC's input. I know at the time they said we could go to public comments. I don't believe that's the best way to get our input. I think it's more so that we talk about it in our meetings and come, you know, write something up and then send it to them. We are at the end of the time. I want to see if either one, we want to do that and have you may just facilitate you all having that discussion. or we want to push it. I think if we push it, we're going to really fall out of the PAC's timeline. Maybe that's just going to have to be a missed opportunity, or maybe option three is people can just put it in the Google Doc and I can send it. Like people can jot their notes down in a Google Doc and I can send it. So what option sounds best?
I think selfishly, I would prefer that we not have this be a topic of conversation tonight. So I'm happy to revisit this at the next CRC meeting, and I'm happy to contribute to a document, but I think it would be good for you to be part of this conversation, Candace, and we're already running on a pretty short attendance list tonight.
Okay. So how about I will reach out to the PAC and see if our input would still be valuable after our next CRC meeting. If it will not be, then I can see if we can just type something up over email. If it is, then we can just do it next month. Does that sound good? Okay.
Agree.
Still quorum. Okay. Last we have work group updates. Crowd control is going to go to the PSEP town hall during our regularly scheduled meeting. Currently not working on anything else. We'll likely cancel next week's meeting. What do you think, Yumei? Should we cancel next week's? I don't have any agenda items.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. So we're going to cancel next week's, and then the October meeting is going to be at the PSEP thing. Chris, I'm going to reach out to you when I have a moment to, one, get you to sign up for a work group, and two, Yumei is going to be your buddy. So Yumei will work with you to get you acquainted and be your friend on CRC. Julie, did you raise your hand?
Oh, I was just, you know, sending an invitation to the policy and outreach work group.
Yes, that is true. Ginger was going to join the policy outreach. They kind of need some folks. So maybe I'm going to nudge you, Chris, to join that work group, but we can talk about it later. I saw the email chain about policy outreach work group. Sounds like we got to sort out some scheduling stuff.
I think that people agreed that we should meet in October. I think we should look at our to figure out a new standing meeting time based on availability and the composition of the group. So maybe we can do that really soon. But that will be our first meeting of the fall.
Okay. I really have to go. So I'm wondering maybe if you can do the public comment section, you may, so I can leave. Does that sound good? Okay, I'm going to make you post, and we should still have quorum to do that. Post. Okay, you may take it away. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you all next month.
Bye, Candace.
Thanks, Candace. David, you're taking notes, correct? I don't need to be taking minutes.
Yeah, it's recorded, so we're good.
Good. All right. Let's take a look here. Julie, I don't know if we cut you off here. Did you have anything else to add to your update?
Not particularly, no.
All right. And I don't think we have anyone from recurring audit, so I think we can move on from there.
Actually, if I could just say, if there are any new people joining our group, which we would very much welcome, just let maybe, you know, fold that person, fold into that email chain so that we can get an October meeting set.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks, Julie. Any new business from committee members before we move on to public comment? Going once, going twice. Looks like we will, hang on, let me just do a quick count. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, we still have 5. All right, perfect. So moving on to public comment. David, I might need your help here. If I have any issues, please raise your hand to talk. Greg, are you able to do timekeeping?
Yes, I am. All set.
So I'm going to leave this open for, let's say, the next minute here. Dan will have to make his public comment via chat, which is fine. If anyone else of the other 11 attendees would like to make public comment, you have 3 minutes. Please raise your hand and we'll get your mic turned on for you. While we're waiting, Dan, if you want to, I guess, submit your comments via chat here. So I've never done 3 minutes of time public comment for chat remarks here. So I'm just going to read through these. And I think, Dan, I'm going to give you till about 7:05 as we discuss the ones you're bringing up to put whatever notes you want in here. Okay. So number one, IPR report did not provide specific numbers for allegation types such as courtesy, et cetera. Number two, there are no outcomes in the IPR report, but their online portal shows zero findings of sustained on force allegations. Info on CRC is wrong on IPR report. CRC's crowd control report is not mentioned. So Ross, I don't know if you want to comment on any of those things. I thought I did see some summaries here, but maybe they weren't as detailed as Dan was thinking. I'm not sure if you have anything you want to say.
Yeah, is the feedback on the report. So I'm sure we will get that from them if we haven't received it already. I can check on the online portal on the dashboard. So I know we've been having some trouble with our Tableau license. There's some kind of problem between the city and Tableau that we're trying to get resolved. So that might be part of that, but I'll check on it tomorrow.
I think Dan does make a good point here, looking at what demographic data that we do have, that a very large number of the people who did file reports and were willing to share their demographic information identify as Black. And I'm not reading these in their entirety, but just for the record, let's take a look here. Dan also notes that I think this was brought up at the last meeting, that we still have several officer involved shootings where they have not released the names of the involved officers. They haven't released the names of the subjects in those incidents. I'm assuming that's outside of IPR's control, but it is. I also agree with Dan, it's worth noting. And a note about the timeline for PAC. Okay. Dan, can we maybe make this the last note here, and then we'll adjourn? Awesome. Thank you. Sorry we weren't able to do this in a more traditional format. I'm sure David will be working on trying to get that resolved. Any final business before we adjourn for the day? Thank you for sharing that link. All right, wonderful. Thank you all for coming. Chris, welcome to the CRC. I'll be connecting with you offline, and we will see you all next month. This meeting is adjourned.